Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Hi there, and welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could tune in once again. And I mentioned on the Friday show that we would be doing another Cybersecurity Sunday version of the show today. However, we've changed course. Mr. AI Wynn was called into action again last night, and it's always short notice, it seems like. So we'll catch another cybersecurity show hopefully this coming Sunday. There's been a couple of interesting developments that Wynn will explain and give us the behind the scenes look, since we really can't tell as much as we would like sometimes from the news. But it's a tight community, the cybersecurity folks, and there's a lot of talk behind the scenes. I want to remind you, as we do every week, that just because you hear us discuss certain strategies on the show today or on a website, anywhere except when you're engaged with us, please go check with your existing advisors and make sure that what you heard actually means what you think it does, and that it might be applicable to your facts and circumstances that are uniquely yours. It's amazing at times how people misconstrue what the content really says. And once they talk to their advisors, then it becomes a bit clearer. So we're going to urge you to do that. And just remember, there's always new strategies, new opportunities coming along. If you can't get the current one executed, don't worry. There'll be other things you can do. And as we approach year end, obviously this is the time right now. In fact, it's a little late in some cases, but we still have almost a couple months left to initiate some planning strategies. I'm going to talk about something that is kind of cybersecurity related. I had an article, or there was an article on Kiplinger. Let's see, when was this? It was just recently. Let's see here. Does it even have a date? Sometimes Kiplinger doesn't put the dates. Well, it was recent. They've got it as a lead on their website, but it's talking about 10 places where you should never give your Social Security number. And, you know, this is to keep it from falling into the wrong hands, obviously. However, depending on which number you believe, I heard another commercial today for one of the companies that helps you lock or freeze your credit, which we think is a good idea generally. I don't know that we would promote any one service. Oh, this article was last updated 3 days ago, so it must have already been out there, and they're pushing it back to the top on their website. But anyway, there were 2.9 billion. Think about that. That's a lot more than just us Americans. It's probably 2.7 billion Americans, because that's probably where most of the credit reporting is done, was breached. And so that information is out on the dark web. I've already had one phone call regarding someone trying to open a new credit card account. And I don't know that it was related to that breach, but I suspect it might have been. And, you know, the nuance about the current breach, the one that just happened here a couple months ago, it's the National Public Data. If you want to search that to learn more about it, it was the most voluminous credit information profile and included Social Security numbers. And it's not that others haven't, but there haven't been any other nearly 3 billion count of credit information that's been stolen and put out for public, well, for hacker public consumption. But anyway, times change, and the places where you should never give your Social Security number are not as obvious as they might have once been. Safeguarding your Social Security number is one of the best ways to prevent identity theft. Not only should you never carry your Social Security card in your wallet or purse, but you should rarely give out your Social Security number. I don't know about you, but every time I'm asked for my Social Security number, I've got kind of an alarm that sounds in my head, and it's like, well, why would I have to give this? And, you know, sometimes it just feels wrong. You know, it just feels bad. But in any places, the more places that have your Social Security number, the more at risk it is of falling into the wrong hands. And, you know, I think about some of the software that we work with where, you know, we have encryption from our point of connecting to the internet to the other end, but then there's people that work for those companies or those institutions that internally have access to your Social Security number or whatever data you've got there. And so you just can never underestimate the possibility, or I'd say probability, that your data is being looked at by people that, if you just had them all in one room, you would say, well, not that one, or not that one, you know. But anyway, in any event, here's the some of the places that you should never give your Social Security number. And just understand that the repetitive use and disclosure of your Social Security number in organizational record-keeping systems multiplies the susceptibility of persons to potential identity theft. And I know this seems commonsensical, but at times I'm amazed at how many people will provide their Social Security number or provide the whole number when it's, you know, you're only being asked for the last four digits, which is pretty common these days if it's someone that is rightfully in possession of your Social Security number. And by that, I mean banks or credit card companies, you know, et cetera. According to the Department of Justice, as of 2021, one in five people, 22%, had experienced identity theft in their lifetime. And speaking from experience, that's a frustrating experience, and it takes a while before you can truly turn the car around, so to speak. I remember I had one of my bags stolen that had my wallet in it, and it was at least, the first thing I did, this was back in the day when there was no LifeLock or any of those types of companies available to protect your credit or your data. And I set up for the first time in my life, and I mean, I was well into my 50s, if I recall, I went ahead and set up accounts on each of the three major credit reporting bureaus, and it was crazy how that, excuse me, over the next 6 months to a year, routinely new cell phone accounts were attempted to be opened, credit cards and other lines of credit, and assorted rent or leases. You know, I was having landlords contact me, and in every case, I was able to shut them down because it would show up on the credit reports. And to my knowledge, I never had any permanent stain or permanent damage. But I tell you what, it was like playing whack-a-mole in terms of staying on it and making sure that I contacted those companies. But anyway, so the 10 places where you should never give your Social Security number, if in most cases, it's okay to say no if they ask you for it. There's always another way of validating you or authenticating that you're who you say you are. But anyway, here they go. Universities and colleges, banking and financial institutions. And that was a surprise when I read this article that those would actually be on the list. And so I'm not sure. I think I've always readily provided it in my own case. And so I presume there's other ways besides just your mother's maiden name or birth date that they can, figure out that you're who you say you are. Hospitals, state governments, local government, and federal government. Medical businesses, these are companies that concentrate on services and products for the medical field, such as distribution of, as example, distribution of diabetes or dialysis supplies, medical billing services, or pharmaceutical companies. And, I was just in a Costco yesterday picking up a prescription, and it occurred to me, I asked them, I said, do you have my Social Security number? And they said they did not, and I was really surprised. I don't know why. I guess it's because we just assume in this day and time that, anybody dealing with your medical information would have that. And then let's see, moving down the list, nonprofit organizations should never have a reason to have that data. Technology companies, if they don't already have it, right? Health insurers and medical offices. And I don't know. I would assume that I've given mine to at least an insurance company. I don't think I've provided it to doctors. And by the way, that's one big difference between here and living overseas. As you know, I discuss part-time living abroad or full-time at times, and some of the things that are attractive about that. And, I've never been asked for my Social Security number in Thailand. And I guess that's just one more reason that I like that culture and that way of living. So moving past the 10 places we shouldn't give our numbers, who does need your Social Security number? And even though one of the riskiest places to give out your Social Security number is the banking industry, most of the time there's no way around that. Because think about it, you've got reporting, 1099 INTs, and other governmental reporting. So anytime you're opening a bank account or a credit card, you'll typically be required to share your Social Security number. And by the way, that is the case in most foreign countries. Any country that's got a connection to the U.S.'s financial banking system in terms of participating in settling wire transactions, et cetera, you're going to have to provide that information in this day and time. I mean, there's no such thing as a Swiss bank account anymore. You may know that already, but even Switzerland, or the Swiss banking system, will cooperate with the U.S. on providing that info. So if you're being told in most countries that you can have an account without a Social Security number, I would caution you, make sure it's a legitimate source, because it likely is not. in any event, even though there's no way around it, you still need to be aware of the potential dangers that are awaiting you and practice caution when giving it out, even under those circumstances where it's required. You're likely to have to provide your Social Security number to your bank or employer, but be wary of providing it to anyone else, says a party that's general manager for identity and privacy at LifeLock. So LifeLock's one of the big credit freeze or credit review organizations. For instance, if your dentist or doctor asks for it on an intake form or when you're registering, don't automatically share that. This also applies to lawyers, financial advisors, and crypto exchanges. And I did fail to mention in my earlier disclaimer that if you don't have advisors, you can go to our website, baplannershow.com, or just baplanner.com. We've got both of those domains. And you'll see a forms link on the homepage. And if you'll at least fill out Form 1, Step 1, that's our client profile intake form. And we do not ask for your Social Security number. We figure we'll get it eventually if you decide, and we decide that, you know, we can help you if we work with you. But I'm just like these other institutions are mentioning here. I don't have any need for your Social Security number now. We might later, if we end up working with you and we're going to prepare tax returns, etc., well, then obviously we're going to have that, but we'll have other forms you can fill out, tax questionnaires and organizers, things like that. But in any event, in addition to dentists and doctors, it also applies, I mentioned, lawyers, financial advisors, and crypto exchanges. And I know there's some other places I've been asked that don't fit necessarily into one of these categories. It's somewhat shocking how often it does come up. And the gentleman with LifeLock recommends asking exactly why someone needs your Social Security number and whether they can use another way to identify or verify, authenticate is the word that you see a lot these days, to verify your identity instead, like a driver's license or your insurance card. And the driver's license is another piece of data that it's not good if it gets breached. It's not quite at the level of Social Security number, but driver's licenses let parties see a lot of information about you as well on other sites. I know we use a site called publicdata.com that we use to vet tenants from time to time. And it's not 50 states worth of data, but it's got quite a few, and Texas is one of them. And if you have that driver's license number, you can look up pretty much anyone in terms of their court appearances. I'll use a diplomatic word that they might have participated in. But in any event, if you do get asked for it and they verify how they're going to use it, then you can take that opportunity to ask them, how are you going to protect that data? What type of system does it go into? And obviously, you're not ever going to really truly know, unless maybe it's your company, then you might know what's going on behind the curtain. But anyway, it's obvious there is no slam dunk 100% way to identify yourself, according to Adam Levin, chairman and co-founder of Cyber Scout, formerly Identity Theft 911, tells us, everywhere you turn, you're going to run into an organization looking for information from you. How do you stop your Social Security number from getting stolen? Well, despite what they're going to tell you here, I'm going to tell you right now, you really don't have significant ways of doing that unless you're just extremely old school and you lock your Social Security card in your safe and don't give out your number, or at least minimize so you know who has it, but you don't know who's buying that information or who's selling it. And how many of you look at the privacy policies when you're asked, you know, to accept cookies, you know, online? And I tell you, those systems are intentionally frustrating, it appears to me, in terms of you understanding. When you first click on that review our privacy policy link, that'll be right there close by with most of those requests to accept cookies, it's just so frustrating. I mean, they're not the same. I can't even tell sometimes whether by clicking the button I'm confirming that it's okay or it's not okay, and that's intentional. I mean, the value of your data to other marketers or to other folks trying to sell you things is, I guess, so significant that it behooves them to make it complicated in terms of assessing your choices. In any event, you know, the type of groups that you're worried about are ones that can't require it, your Social Security number as example, but they act like they can, and in some cases they may refuse to do business with you if you don't provide it. And in those cases, I guess I would recommend, well, at least ask if you can give them just the last four numbers rather than your full Social Security number. So anyway, well, let's do this. We're past our normal break time. Let's go ahead and take a break. We will circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna warm it up and take it live and make.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I want to reiterate what you just heard on the break, that if anyone would like to connect with me, whether it's here during the show today or this coming week or even further out, feel free to hang on to the number 713-581-0195, and you can text me on that number, or you can call and leave a voicemail, and I will circle back to you near term once I get that message. And I get a number of inquiries vis-a-vis that text that may not be relevant to today's topic, so I probably won't discuss issues here on the show unless it's something that applies to a topic that we're covering already. And then also, like I mentioned earlier, if you want to schedule a call with us, you can go to baplannershow.com and fill out at least our step one form one client profile form, and then you can set up a call there at the link right next to the forms link. And I'm actually in the U.S. at the moment. I will be here through the end of the year, and for those of you that might want to meet, I'm happy to do that if there's a logistical reason why that makes sense. Otherwise, I do tend to work remotely with most of my clients, and of course that's a non-event these days. I remember pre-COVID, I used to have to beg, plead, and cajole to get people to just do a phone call or an online call. We use GoToMeeting. I've used Zoom occasionally, but in any event, all that's changed. It seems like the whole world came to my side of the room during COVID, and we don't have to beg anymore for those types of meetings. But we would love to have you come visit in Thailand, and we are contemplating, I wouldn't say working on it just yet, but we are contemplating doing some in-person education in Thailand, in Bangkok. And so, if you're thinking about enjoying that part of the world or learning more about that part of the world, we may be able to work out a way to make it a tax-deductible excursion. So for those of you that have small businesses specifically, there would be a way likely that we can tweak the content to make it qualify for deductions. Speaking of in-person seminars, as many of you know, I actually stay in San Antonio at one of my properties. Most of the times I come to the U.S., and we've got a marvelous public event space that's very close to both of my two properties here in the Southtown area, which is kind of like the Montrose River Oaks section of Houston. It's older, and one of our properties here is about 105 years old, very historical, and we're putting together several different agendas for multiple days of in-person training, in-person seminar on assorted tax topics and tax strategies. And we will include lodging at our properties in that tuition, if you will, fee. And we're going to try to make that a regular thing as I travel back and forth. We may resort to a remote option for those of you that can't make it to San Antonio. And we'll probably follow up once we do one in San Antonio. We'll do one in Houston just to judge the benefit of in-person versus online delivery of that content. But we're going to talk about things, and I'm going to go down just as an example I'm going to mention here very shortly strategies for small businesses other than real estate investments, the type of entities that you might choose. And, you know, there's a list of seven of these, and I'm just going to hit very, very high, just call it marketing points. It's not how to go do it here, but we are going to offer that at the in-person training for this particular topic. And so the nice thing about San Antonio, and I know a lot of you have probably been there and you understand the uniqueness, it's just a great spot that's close to Houston, close enough where, you know, you can drive over in 3 hours. It's not hard to get to. You may be surprised to learn that San Antonio has 46 million visitors a year visit this city, and a lot of them are drive-in as opposed to flying in. We get a lot of both at our property. We do some short-term rentals, and in fact, we just had the Billy Joel and Sting concert was here, Alamo Dome. We had a couple that came from Israel to attend that concert, which blows me away. But, you know, in talking to them, you could tell they just had such a affinity for their enjoyment with San Antonio. And San Antonio, if you haven't been here, you won't understand. It's amazing, for being so close to Houston and Dallas, how different it is. And I've said many times over the last, we've been here. We bought the first property back in 2004. And at first, it took me more than a few years to figure out the differences between, the things that matter between Houston and San Antonio. And I'll just tell you, the older I get, the more I appreciate San Antonio. It's slower. You know, the way I explain it, and I've said this to many clients when I explain the differences, you know, the average San Antonian is not nearly as savvy as us Houston or Dallas types. But I always also throw in, yeah, but they won't knife you in the back like we ambitious keeping up with the Jones types from Houston and Dallas. And it's more of a live and let live scenario. And I wrap my little narrative up by saying, you know, the people in San Antonio work just enough to live, whereas we Houston and Dallas folks live to work. And I tell you, everybody kind of chuckles when I deliver that message, because they know exactly what I'm talking about. And this town is just easier. That's all I can say. Traffic's not as bad. The convenience factor is higher. And once you get used to, from a real estate investor perspective, once you get used to the zoning layers that apply, or the Office of Historical Preservation or Historic Preservation, it's just a great place to be. And we think that a routine, maybe a quarterly schedule of classes over here, and on assorted topics, including some property tours. You know, small apartments is going to be one of our focuses, and I've got an 8-unit here that we own that is a nice view into that particular arena. And we've got some clients and other folks that have larger properties here, and so we think we can put together a nice little program that would be more cost effective than some of your other options, and at the same time give you the ability to enjoy life. I mean, if you're a real estate investor or a small business person and you're not taking vacations, shame on you. You know, as you get older, you've got to. And travel, it seems to me, is one of the most desirable things that your lifestyle as an investor should do for you. And if it's not, you know, maybe we need to help you reconsider the benefits, and especially of international travel. I look at, and I didn't really plan to live in Southeast Asia when I first went over there. It's hard to believe. It's been almost 20 years ago. But we Americans just don't understand what the rest of the world offers in many cases. Some of you may, but I tell you, there's nothing like travel to open your eyes. Get outside the U.S., so you can appreciate the rest of the world and appreciate the U.S. The U.S. is a wonderful country. It's a great country. But, you know, things change. And you may decide that, hey, I'd be better off spending, I don't know, half your time maybe in a different country or in multiple different countries. But anyway, let's go ahead and take our final break, and we'll circle back, and I'm going to talk about the profiles of seven business entities that might be the optimal approach for you with your non-real estate investment small businesses. We'll be right back.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Big dreams.
Big dreams.
Big dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us this week. And for those of you that maybe tuned in late and were expecting to hear Mr. AI Wynn with another cybersecurity show, I was too. I was expecting to be part of that this morning. But anyway, he called me late last night and said he had to go out of town on spur of the moment notice. And so we're doing another more regular Be A Planner show with our normal topics. Let's see. So seven profiles or profiles of seven business entities that might be optimum for you. And there's one that is really, I guess, probably the best choice, but it does come with some trade-offs. All these forms of businesses come with pluses and minuses. The first one is the simplest, just a sole proprietorship. And we report those businesses on IRS Schedule C, which for those of you that have a Schedule C, you know that that is filed within your Form 1040. And just a few of the reasons we like or don't like, in most cases don't like Schedule Cs. They have a very high IRS audit risk, can cause you to end up in a costly, time-consuming audit. And if you've ever been through an audit, you'll understand exactly what that means. Most accountants that I know will not represent you in an audit for free. So just because someone does your tax return, that does not obligate them as a preparer, whether they're a CPA, lawyer, or otherwise, to engage with you to go sit with an IRS agent for a day or 18, as it may be, to review your tax data that was used to report on your return for that year. So I don't care if you're, you know, as pure as the driven snow, I believe is the expression. You really don't want to go through an audit. It's a drain on your, maybe your sanity, can be, or your, in the, you know, just from a time perspective, it's crazy how long these things take. I've been very fortunate due to some proactive steps we take in trying to vet information that clients give us. I can count literally on one hand the number of audits that our firm has had, you know, since I started practicing back in 1985, generally. And it's not because of anything we're doing that other accountants or preparers couldn't do, but we're very careful when we report amounts that we're looking at 1099s or other third-party data. And now with the IRS's IRS.gov site, if you don't have an account for you and your significant other on that system, and it's a separate account for you and your spouse that will reflect all your payors at some point during the tax year. Now, if you're looking for them in March, probably not going to find much of that data in your account yet. But if you'll do what I suggest, and this is one really good reason for those of you that keep saying, well, you know, why do I want to extend? Because we extend every client we have. And one good reason, and there's multiple others, is because around May or June, the IRS finally will have updated your account on IRS.gov to have all of those reporting or, you know, documents or amounts from your payors. So, you know, for clients that maybe still get a piece of paper for 1099 div or int or whatever, you know, the account gives you a way to make sure that you got it. Because if you've seen those documents, to me, it's remarkable they ever get to whoever they're going to, period. Because, you know, documents that small can get stuck inside of your, I'm going to use an up-to-date term, I used to say a Sears catalog that's in the mail to you. How about a Costco flyer or little special pricing booklet? I just got one in yesterday. And you know, those documents, it amazes me anything gets anywhere where it's supposed to go with the way mail gets treated these days. But in any event, the things that we don't like about the Schedule C, the sole proprietorship, again, high IRS audit risk, no legal protection at all. You know, as a sole proprietor, you're wide open for lawsuits if you have a problem. No privacy. Your data is totally exposed in a number of ways. All your profits are subject to the self-employment tax. Limited tax-free benefit deductions are available to you. difficulty in deducting your losses. And it's not that they're not allowable. It's that you may have to explain them more so than if they're losses that flow through from an LLC. And that's our second entity type, but it's a single member LLC, which means it's just you or it's just you and your spouse. And it also gets reported on a Schedule C within your 1040. And there's not a whole lot of difference between this and the non-LLC type Schedule C that we just mentioned with the first entity type. So the second entity type, the single member LLC, pretty much the same negatives as the first sole proprietorship type, except for possibly it does give you some legal protection, not as much as a multi-member LLC, but the same expensive pitfalls as the number one sole proprietorship LLC we just discussed exists. Thirdly is the general, what we call a regular partnership, that files an IRS form 1065. So it is a separate filing. That's good. We like to separate business from personal when we can. And so it does, while it has a lower IRS audit profile, unfortunately, it has no legal protection. Partners are jointly and severally liable. That means they're all for one and one for all liable. And all profits of all partners are subjected to self-employment taxes with limited tax deduction or tax-free benefit deductions. The fourth entity type is the LLC partnership. So it's a similar to a general partnership in that it files an IRS form 1065. However, it's got the LLC fence around it, if you will. So it's got some liability protection. And this is for a limited liability company that elects to be taxed as a partnership. LLCs, a multi-member, can elect different filing statuses. They could elect to be an S-corp, which we're going to talk about here in a moment. They could decide to be a C-corporation as well. So the benefits of this is the LLC partnership filing an IRS Form 1065, which means it's a multi-member LLC. Has a lower IRS audit profile, a low IRS audit profile, filing the 1065 versus the 1040 we mentioned in the first two entity formats. You've got legal protection with an LLC. However, all profits of all partners subject to self-employment taxes with, again, limited tax-free benefit deductions. The fifth type, and again, we're just hitting these at a high level. I'm not going to do your 2 or 3 day training class here on the radio, but I want to kind of whet your appetite. If any of these topics appeal to you, send me a text. And if you'll send me your text and maybe an email address, I'll update you as we approach the middle to end of this month, certainly by middle of December. And we're going to target a January date, probably second week in January, to schedule the workshop or the training, whatever we end up calling that. So with the S-Corp, and you know, the S-Corporation files an IRS Form 1120-S, there is legal protection, but it goes downhill from there for most types of businesses. I won't tell you that an S-Corp is not a good form for some folks, but let me just explain quickly because we're running out of time here. there's a high IRS audit risk and associated tax court litigation where the taxpayer almost always loses. And it typically the topic is whether the owners took enough compensation. We refer to that as, did they take reasonable compensation for someone performing the activities that they're performing, and the amount of time that they spend, et cetera. And the problem with those W-2 salaries is that they have all kinds of garbage, quote unquote, withholding taxes. Also have payroll filings along with the hassles related there too. And then there's often limits on fully deducting some of the net losses depending on the business. And then there's some other tax traps inherent with complex S-Corp IRS regulations. We've got a thing called the building gains tax, which I don't want to go into the details, but let's just try to help you understand that S-Corps equal potential problems, even though it's better, perhaps, than a, well, no doubt it's better than a single member LLC. Okay, the sixth entity style or type is a C corporation as the primary entity in your structure. And that's going to file an IRS Form 1120. Legal protection, it's got the best tax-free fringe benefit deduction options available to a corporation. It does have a higher IRS audit profile, but not as high as a Schedule C or S corporation. And then you have double taxation on distributions to owners. That's a big one in a C corporation, double taxation, which may not be a problem depending on which rate you're at in the C corp. You may desire that because you can... You have the C-Corp pay some low tax, and you may not take dividends until future. But constructive dividends are taxable. Again, that's a topic for the seminar. Numerous penalty taxes. Number seven, and this is the best business entity that we think for most people, it's a special two-class member LLC partnership. And let me just give you a summary here real quick because we're running out of time. Legal protection with a two-class member, limited liability company, low IRS audit risk on Form 1065. Most of the net profits will not be subject to self-employment tax. No controversial IRS issues such as reasonable compensation or constructive dividends. No highly taxed W-2 salaries are required to members. No payroll tax, no payroll filings and hassles, no limits on fully deducting losses, no double taxation, tax-free fringe benefit, no other costly pitfalls. So if these topics interest you, let me know. Send me a text and I'll include you on our upcoming announced schedule for the new Be a Planner Tax Academy. Thank you for tuning in. We're right here on the edge, closing out. We hope you'll join us again next Friday, 11 a.m., this coming Friday, right here on 700 a.m. KSEV.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.